Blog Talk Radio.
Detail oriented as Tiger Woods is a disgrace.
So I blame it too far. I mean, Goff and Tiger Woods both dropped the ball, no pun intended, on this one. It just I don't understand it. And for those who are coming out saying Tiger Woods should, withdraw, shut up. David Duval, shut up. Yeah, first of all, David Duval, you haven't been relevant for a decade. Nobody even you've been. I mean, come on, shut up. If the rule is that he receives a two-stroke penalty, then he receives a two-stroke penalty. This idea that this is going to taint him if he wins the tournament and, his conscience, shut up. Nick Faldo, come on. Man, his legacy. If he goes out there and wins the tournament, then he'll have a fifth Masters. This doesn't taint anything. He broke a rule. He was penalized. Two-stroke penalty. Let's move on. There won't be no asterisk next to this 15th Grand Slam, please. I don't want to hear that. The rules were not bent for Tiger Woods. This is a clear rule that was enforced. Matter of fact, the rule was revised 2 years ago that, so he wouldn't be, so a player wouldn't withdraw, have to withdraw from the tournament, so a player would just receive a two-stroke penalty. So no rules have been bent or altered because of the presence of Tiger Woods. Let's just get that, the conspiracy theories, let's just get that all out the way right now. Why would he withdraw if he's taking the penalty? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. He's going to withdraw from the tournament, and he's already been penalized? Out of what? For the gentleman's sake of golf? Shut up. Please. You got to be kidding me. But I don't understand, for the life of me, how Tiger Woods did not know this rule. I will never understand it. Like, it's just, it's one thing, and I mentioned it at the top, He Lang Guan not knowing that slow play can get you a one-stroke penalty. He's 14 years old. He's, been doing algebra and, been doing algebra and physical education. He's 14. Yes. That would be understandable. He doesn't know what's going on at 14. But for Tiger Woods at the age of 37, who has been around the game of golf almost longer than I've been living, and you're supposed to know this, Tiger. There's no excuse for this. And it definitely takes, it takes some juice out of the Masters. Now, listen, five strokes down on moving day is not insurmountable to come back from. This is moving day. The greens are going to be hard. It rained earlier yesterday, so expect the greens to be hard in terms of, expect the guys to, they're going to be a lot, there's going to be a lot of movement, whether the guys getting hot, whether the guys falling off on today, because guys are going to make some putts. You're going to see some guys choke some putts, miss a lot of putts. There's going to be that scoreboard is going to be, there's going to be a lot of name changes on that scoreboard. I guarantee you. And I thought Tiger was playing well. I thought he was playing well. I thought, now again, 15, he has a bogey on it, just bad luck. And now, how much bad luck does that look now, to be honest with you? I mean, considering that had that ball hit the flag stick and dropped, say, 5 or 10 feet from the hole, looking at a birdie, we're not even having this conversation. We're probably having a conversation that Tiger Woods would be Tiger Woods probably would be leading the Masters. He probably would be 6 or 7 under had he not, had that ball not rolled into the pond. I mean, hey, you talk about one shot that changes the course of a tournament. That shot might change the course of this entire tournament on 15. And again, he goes out there, he bogeys 15, par 16. Had two good par saves on 16 and 17, and then he bogeys the 18th hole to drop to 3 under. It was no question that bogey on the 15th hole, kind of threw his round for a loop, even before he knew about the illegal drop. I don't know if he can recover from this, to be honest with you. Two shots, he hasn't won a major now in 5 years. He was playing well, but it's a big in a major tournament. There's a huge difference between being 5 shots out and 3 shots out. That's a big time difference. It's doable, but I just don't know if he can recover from this, to be honest with you. And this is a powerful leaderboard. When you look at, you know, Jason Day playing well, 6-under at least a tournament. Fred Couples, keep your eye on him. He always plays well at the Masters. Angel Cabrera has won a Masters and a U.S. Open, so I don't think he's going anywhere. You have Jim Furyk, Brant Snedeker. You still have Sergio Garcia, Murray, McIlroy in the mix. 16 of the top 30 golfers in the world are 16 of the top 30 slots, 30 spots are taken up by the top 16 players in the world. Make up 16 of those top 30 positions on the leaderboard. So it is a very, very powerful leaderboard. You have a number of former major winners. So it should be a great weekend at Augusta. And even before the two-stroke penalty, Tiger continues to struggle with the par fives. He's just 2-under this week with the par fives. He's over par in terms of the back nine, which he's struggling with the par fives. That 15th hole was a par five. He used to destroy the par fives. He used to kill them. Now he's an average player when it comes to the par five. So, you know, it was already going to be, you know, I thought that before the tournament, that he was going to win the tournament. I thought that even being down by three strokes, I still favored him. But this, to me, might have just broke, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back with this turn of events. I mentioned him earlier, T. Lan Guan, 14 years old, is 4-over. Tied for 55th, and that's including a one-stroke penalty for slow play. Just one of the most remarkable stories in recent Masters history. A 14-year-old can make the cut, and play the kind of golf that this guy is playing. Again, 14 years old. It's astounding. The guy has been unflappable. How he handled the penalty with class and dignity. You certainly like to see that. And Woods did too. I mean, Woods was a big boy about it. He didn't whine or bitch and moan about it. So you got to give him credit for that, considering that he actually has a chance to win the tournament. So, Tai Ling Guan, look out certainly for him in the future of golf. Without question. 347-215-6180 is your call number. And by the way, they are not going to change. I don't think that they're going to change the pairings because it was just too much shifting with it. We have to go on. So I don't believe they're going to change the pairings in terms of with this third round. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we return, we will have today's headlines. We will be right back.
When you walk through the garden, gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. Gotta keep a devil
14 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of Cyril Quinn Review on this, again, 13th of April, 2004. Today's headlines obviously begins with a devastating loss in terms of the NBA. Kobe Bryant, it hasn't been made official, but we expect that when he takes his MRI later on today that it will be announced that Kobe Bryant is done for the rest of the regular season, including the playoffs if the Lakers make it, with a torn Achilles. This occurred, of course, in the fourth quarter. I'm giving you a perfect example of people don't about driving and texting. You can't do a show and text either, by the way. So don't drive and text. Don't do talk shows and text either. You lose your train of thought. You can't do it. You can't focus. You can't. So Kobe Bryant is going to be done. He blew out his Achilles. Late in the fourth quarter, about 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter of another high pressurized game for the Lakers against Golden State. Bryant up to that point at like 34 was having another tremendous night, not so much shooting, but 34 points, you know, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. Had played 45 minutes up until that point, by the way. He would have played 48 minutes had he not gotten injured. And, you know, this is how the Lakers season should end, to be honest with you. I mean, it would make perfect sense, as I'm going to stop right here because we have a special guest chiming in. I'm surprised you're up right now. It's 11:16, so still supposed to be asleep.
Yeah, there's a lot that's going on in the world of sports.
It is a busy course of, say, 12 hours. It just got from busy to just, you know, D.C. traffic type busy.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I'm right now talking about Kobe, but this is how quickly things could turn. I'm watching the game last night. It was on NBA TV. They were cutting in. First of all, I was prepping the show, and I had the Laker game on the internet in terms of the game cast. And it's like late. Of course, it's like 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left. And I'm saying, why the hell is Jody Meeks in the game and Kobe on the bench? I'm like, is he resting? I'm like. So first of all, that threw me off. So then I go to NBA TV, cuts into the game, and they were like, you know, they show Kobe's injury, and it's like, yeah, he has sustained two injuries before, and this one, you know, he walked off. I saw him walk off. I was like, okay, I guess I'm figuring that, you know, he's just done for the game and what have you. And then I go, Lakers win the game, and then an hour later, you know, they say Kobe's in tears. And I was like, at that point, it's like, yep, this is not going to turn out good. And, of course, you hear about the Achilles, you know, a probable Achilles tear. He says he can't walk. Then I wake up this morning, flip on the TV, and see that Tiger Woods has been penalized too. So I was like, what? I'm like, is this a misprint from the 14-year-old Key Rang Guan who had a one-stroke penalty? I'm like, what did y'all, ESPN, did you? Y'all really dropped the ball. Now, Tiger missed. I watched the shot. What are you talking about? Because I watched the last hour of Tiger's round yesterday. I said, he hit the flag stick. It bounced into the water. He took a drop, and nobody said nothing. I'm like, wow. I was saying to myself, how can this not be brought up until this morning if this is such a big-time rule? And I'll begin with the basketball first because you can flip a coin, but I'm going to begin with the basketball first. Do you feel that these minutes, and I'm going to read you how many minutes in the last 10 games he's played, but he came into this game averaging 38.6 minutes a game, which is second only behind Damian Lillard, who's a rookie, by the way. In the last 10 games, he had played 38, 42, 38, 36, 48, 47, 43, 47, 41, and 48. And last night would have played 48 had he not gotten injured. Do you think this contributed to that injury?
Well, first, thanks for having me on. Second, I was just watching SportsCenter, so I can actually update you on, like, they did, like, a nice breakdown on, like, what happened with the Tiger.
Okay.
But we'll start with Kobe. I mean, you know, 17 years in the league. What is he, 34, 35?
34, 60,000 minutes, including the playoffs.
You know, can the cumulative effect be there? Absolutely. But am I going to blame what happened on that? Because we saw Rose, you know, blow out his knee, you know, just on a jump. We've seen, you know, another athlete where, you know, break his leg just on. So it can happen. My point is it can happen anytime.
Right.
The Lakers needed Kobe to play that many minutes. Kobe needed to play that many minutes just in order to get them to the point in which they were contending for the eighth playoff spot. So can you look back and go, well, no, the Lakers, well, no, Kobe should or should not have played, you know, X amount of minutes. No, they needed every single minute that he could give them, and he was willing to give him those minutes, and sometimes injuries happen. You know, I'm very critical of the Lakers, very critical of the Lakers. But on this one, I can't fault the organization.
Fair. I mean, you understand watching sports long enough that injury can occur at any moment, any time. I'll just say this. Bill Simmons was hit up Twitter saying that, and it was, I kind of found it funny, saying that Phil Jackson would not have been playing him that many minutes per game, even despite the circumstances. Now, again, you know, I could say that Bill Simmons, they probably wouldn't have needed him to play that many minutes.
Right.
Phil Jackson was so you have to be fair about that aspect.
Right.
I just think that it was almost inevitable, and I said this at the top. I was like, this probably is how the Lakers season should have ended, unfortunately, considering how the season has gone. This just makes sense. It makes sense that that eventually the body just says, no, you are 34, and I don't care how much mental, you know, fortitude, and I don't care how mentally strong you are. You still are made of flesh and tissue and bones and what have you. And it's just, you know, not only playing that many minutes, and not only the cumulative effect, but just all the wear and tear. And even Kobe mentioned it about the retirement, about what he has to put his body through over the course to just get ready for the game, and the things that it just seemed like. You know, that I didn't predict this, but it just seemed like I'm just not shocked by this. I'm not surprised. I'm just not shocked. Even though he's been basically in the struggle for his career, this, you know, it's a blow to the league and it's a blow to the Lakers, but it just doesn't shock me considering just the amount of minutes, and not only just playing minutes, but just minutes at a high level and with the kind of pressure of a franchise that's on him. These are high level minutes. You know, they say,
well,
they say in baseball, pitchers have high stress innings, high stress pitches. Well, he had been playing high stress minutes, so to speak.
I honestly never ever thought in my wildest dreams that there would be a time where I felt emotional pain for Kobe. But watching that interview after the game, when he finally came out and his eyes were still red from tears, after the season that he's had, after all that he's done, and that to happen to him in that moment when they're on the precipice of the playoffs, it was almost like a Greek tragedy. Like, I can see
it
from his perspective,
like
how it's just like, what? I did everything right. I did everything right this time. I did it. I did everything everybody asked of me and more, and what I asked myself. And this happens now at this point. Man, I can only imagine the devastation that he feels in a sports context. You know, giving his all. I mean, like I've said this. You know, as much as I have loved watching the Lakers suffer this year. And it has been. It's been great fun to watch.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
My respect for Kobe has just risen. And I think his respect and his place is, you know, in history has risen to a different level.
Yeah, I mean, he's had just a season for the ages. And I mean, no, like, you know, no player with the amount of that's played the amount of minutes and that in his 17th year has ever had a season ever. Like,
yeah.
Even Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I mean, it was late. Remember, Kareem was playing with Magic and Worthy. So, no, this is, you were watching a historical season, considering, again, this is his 17th season. And yeah, it was remarkable. The Portland game where he goes 47, 8, 6, and 5, 4 blind, like, and, you know, just, it's just, he, the thing about it is, I mean, you can hate him, you can love him or hate him, but you would have to respect his passion and his love for the game. Here's this guy who was sacrificing his body, going all out for an eighth seed, not a championship. In AFC in the playoffs, they're going to get. I mean, whoever they play, they're going to get basically probably smashed by. But it didn't matter. I mean, he never thought in that context. Now moving forward.
Hold on, really quick, because I want to say this: happiest person in the NBA about Kobe's injury. Greg Popovich.
If I'm Greg Popovich,
I'm on the phone to the commissioner saying, give me my damn money back.
Right. No question.
See what happens when you play your older player? If he were playing Tim Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker, Parker could take it for the most part. Duncan and Ginobili, Bonnie Park would be falling off by the end of the season.
There's no way. Ginobili's out right now. Parker isn't healthy. Duncan is, ironically, the oldest one. Is probably the most healthiest one right now.
Right.
There's no question. Now, listen, Popovich, for multiple reasons, is happy. Number one, the fact that the possibility that he would have not had to face the Lakers in the playoffs in the first round, which a beat up team and a Laker team with momentum, that is not actually a good matchup for them. To be honest with you, that's one thing. But the second thing, like you mentioned, is a great point. This, you know, he got killed about the integrity of the game and fans, money, and all this other nonsense. No, he knows his players. Coaches know his players. When they get to Greg Popovich's level, and he knows what he can get out of him, he knows how many minutes they can need. Look what Miami's doing.
Yep.
Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade played last night, but I wouldn't have been surprised had he sat into the playoffs. I mean, the physical wear and tear of a regular season compared to what and getting ready for the playoffs. The playoffs is like another season. You can't
exactly
You don't risk the playoffs for the regular season. That's all there is to it.
Not when you have everything locked up. In the case
of San Antonio, you know, not when you go 10 or 12 deep. I mean, they go deep enough to where those guys can rest, where those guys can miss games and what have you. Greg Popovich, listen, when we say at the time, it's his team, he can do what he wants. I don't see how you can tell somebody how to run your organization, run your team. So the fine was a joke. I don't care how many season ticket holders. And first of all, forget about the season ticket holders. I don't care how many, because their money's already in the bank as it is. It's the people who purchase their tickets, they say on game day and things of that nature who got affected. But those are the breaks. I mean, I'm sorry for the fans, but it is you had to do what you had to do in order to protect your players and win a championship. That's your job as a coach. So. No, I have. Yeah, Popovich looks like a absolute genius right now, and Popovich is probably smiling like, oh yeah, like you said, give me my money back, basically to David Stern. On your way out, before you retire, I want my money back. How about the Tiger asset? What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, so here's the rundown. This is how crazy not crazy. I mean, we all know like golf operates on this weird honor system and all this stuff that's supposed to happen. So apparently what happened, not apparently, this is what's being reported, is that in preparation for the fifth shot, after he hit it, hits the flagpole, rolls back into the water, Tiger does a drop, and then, like you said, drop, hits it, saves Bogey. A viewer called in to the committee and said, you know, Tiger violated the rule. The committee looks at it, and while Tiger's on the 18th, and decides it's okay,
right.
He goes in and signs his card. He then later does an interview in which he says and uses the words, yeah, I did the drop, I was looking at it, there's a divot kind of in the way, so I moved it 2 yards back and hit it off. And it was after the interview that the committee then reviewed it and said that he was supposed to, he said that he did in fact violate the rules, moved him 2 shots behind, and then he signed it, and then moved him 2 shots behind on the car, and then he got assessed a 3-stroke penalty. And then normally that would have constituted a disqualification.
Right, but they revised it from 2 years ago.
They revised it in 2012 be able to do that. And so I just found like the timeline and how everything happened to be really interesting. Tiger was on fire.
His original score, and he mentioned it in the interview, did not reflect how well he played. He was playing great yesterday. He had the bad break.
That was a birdie.
If it had been an eagle.
It might have been an eagle.
Had it bounced the right way for him and say been 5 to 10 feet from the hole, it would have been a birdie putt. He would be leading the tournament right now into water. So he goes from leading the tournament until basically being, you know, 6-5 strokes out. I mean, it's amazing how that one hole, hole probably changed the course of this tournament. There's no two ways about it. And, like, I have a problem. The rule I don't have a problem with the rule. The rules are the rules.
Yeah.
If it takes a viewer to identify that rule, that's the problem. Dang, that's what golf.
It's been happening for years in golf. They had a couple. I can't remember the names, but they were having a couple of golfers on a round table in Sports Center, and one of the golfers was like, "Yep, you know, this happened to me at Doral. A viewer called in, and I was disqualified for the rest of the tournament because I did, you know, X." So it's been happening for a while.
That's part of the
honor system of golf or whatever, that a viewer can't call in and assess or divulge a potential rule violation.
It's
weird, too.
It's embarrassing. No, it's not weird. It's embarrassing to your sport that the fact that you cannot and that you don't know – that you supposedly understand all these rules, have these 10,000 rules, and one of the biggest rules, probably one of the top rules up there, that you don't enforce right off the bat. It makes no sense. I mean,
even after the viewer,
they confirmed it right.
No, he's okay.
Yeah, they're right. That makes it worse. Right. The fact that it took them to this morning, late night into the morning for them to recognize this and finally say, "Oh no, it's a 2-shot penalty. It's a joke." And the fact, and Tiger had to take a hit. Tiger, dude, you've been around the game for like a million forever, since a golf club was taller than you, and how you not know this rule? Like, I don't get how Tiger, even in the heat of competition, as detail oriented as Tiger Woods, how can you not know this rule if you're Tiger Woods? You're Tiger Woods. You know, I was getting on the 14-year-old about the 1-stroke penalty he had to take in terms of
slow
play. I said, you know what? He's 14. He's thinking about girls and algebra. So I don't care. I can't get on him. He's 14 years old. He's been around the game for about 2 seconds.
Right.
So his thing is it's whatever in terms of that with him. He took the penalty, was quiet about it, kept it moving. You're Tiger Woods, you're 37 years old, you've been around the game for over 30 years. You have to know this rule. You have to know. It's just in a major tournament, in the Masters, with your career in the crossroads, you have to know this rule.
My question, because like I agree with you, you do have to know the rule, but you also, as Tiger, have to feel like, whew, I dodged a bullet. Like, I could be disqualified right now.
No, absolutely. No, like, yes. And you, too, listen, it's going to be hard for him to come back for five strokes. But again,
that's my question. Yes.
This is, it's possible. It's possible considering that this is a day where they call it moving day. This is where you're going to see this stuff just, nobody's dominating, okay? But you're going to see just all kinds of movement on the board. You're going to see a lot of action. The greens are hard, so it's going to come down to who's making putts because it hasn't rained. It rained early in the day on Friday, but after that, the greens have been hard and supposed to be warm down there. So it's going to come down to who's making putts. So you're going to see a lot of movement. Like, you're going to see the leader change. You will see the leaderboard change at least three, four, or five different leaders, to be honest with you. That's the kind of day. It's absolutely wide open. Unless somebody just gets hot and just goes nuts, which is possible, always in a major. But he's still in it. I think he's still in it. I don't think he's going to win it, but I don't think that this takes him out of contention. I think he will be a factor this weekend and into Sunday. I don't think he will win it, though. Now, coming into today, before I knew about the penalty, I thought even at 3-under, even just three shots behind, I thought he was going to win it. I really did. I thought he was going to win it. I thought coming into this tournament, that he was going to win it. But this to me, just, you know, five strokes. He doesn't have a history even when he was Tiger. At his best of coming from behind anyway. I think that this might just be a little too much for him to overcome, to be honest with you.
I wonder if this isn't a potential... I wonder if this isn't a potential spark for Tiger, meaning, you know, like... This is like I'm as hot as anybody on the planet.
Right.
You know, I got this unfortunate or fortunate break. You know,
right.
Now let me show the golf world or even like a little bit of that, you know, defiant because I've heard comments like, oh, he should disqualify himself, which is ridiculous,
right.
Ridiculous, ridiculous. That's the dumbest thing on the planet.
It is dumb as hell playing. Like, he's not going to leave a major. The rules are the rules. He got the 2-stroke penalty. That's, you know, that's it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty much it. But why? Like, and that's the thing about golf, that, you know, this whole gentleman league thing. Like, no, you don't train years and years to get to this point, and then you withdraw when you don't have to withdraw. That's idiotic. That's moronic. So no, and this one to me, if he were to go on to win this tournament. Yeah, I would think about this. I don't think that this was part of it, but I wouldn't think of this as a, you know, team, this win or an asterisk. Like, no, he didn't cheat. He got penalized for a rule, he broke a rule, got penalized, and that was it. So, no.
Yeah.
He shouldn't. But the pundits are going to be the pundits. They're going to say what they're going to say.
Oh,
even golfers who haven't – and that guy, David Duval, hasn't won a thing in about a decade, so nobody even cares about you, right? You're making that statement, by the way. So, yeah, of course you're going to have golfers who are jealous, who already don't like Tiger, who are going to say something like that. But the majority of golfers just say, hey, he got the rule, he broke the rule, got penalized, let's keep it moving. I mean, bottom line.
Let's move on.
Golf needs Tiger Woods, bottom line. You don't.
If you're smart,
if you're using your common sense, you want Tiger Woods in the tournament and in all the tournaments. So, no.
Yeah, exactly. Stop.
I mean, I think he can flip this and turn it into a motivational, you know, thing and say, hey, I was playing great before. I had one bad shot. Let me, you know, continue playing the way I was playing before that particular shot. And it wasn't even a bad shot. It was a great shot that just one bad break, I should
right.
say. It was
yeah.
a great. So, you know, let me just continue it on. So, he can reverse it. I mean, again, five strokes down is not insurmountable. Again, I don't see anybody running away with the tournament. the way the Masters is normally is on moving day, it's going to be a lot of changes to that leaderboard. You watch that leaderboard for the when play starts today at 3 o'clock, compared to what it looks like right now. It's going to be a lot of movement. I can trust you. I can give you that. But thanks for chiming in. You know, this is Lakers season. This is the Lakers season. Dwight is your team now.
The Dwight Howard Show.
It's the Dwight Howard Show. This is the Dwight Howard Show. And Mike D'Antoni, you actually have to coach now, unfortunately. Like, you...
That's true.
You actually have to coach a little bit more. I mean, Kobe's going to be on the... He said he's going to be on the sideline, but it's... Matter of fact, you know what? Mike D'Antoni, you just stay in the locker room. Let Kobe coach. Let Kobe coach. How about that? Oh, you let Kobe coach. I would love...
That would be great.
Coach. I would love it.
That would be amazing.
I asked you about this. Based on what you've seen, out of the Knicks, do you think they can contend with the Heat?
Huh. That's a great question. And the only reason is, Barkley. Barkley's not informed about his opinion, but I heard Barkley last night, or the night before, talking about why the Thunder don't stand a chance against the. Maybe if the Knicks or the Thunder are just shooting the lights out of the building, but they have to do it four times, and that's the hard piece to envision. And without that low post game, without kind of like that depth in the middle to pound the Heat and slow the game down, it's going to be really tough to beat them.
Yeah.
It's going to be really tough to beat them. And the Heat play defense, and the Thunder
don't play no defense. That game on Sunday with the Thunder and the Knicks was hilarious, because I was like, man, it was 125 to like 121. Regulation. I was like, my goodness. I'm like, I love the pace, but I'm like, neither one of these teams is going to beat the Heat. Scoring, giving up 120 points in a four-quarter game. Like, it's not going to happen. I mean, the bottom line is the Heat can only beat the Heat. That's the bottom line. The Heat can only beat the Heat.
Yep.
So, you'll see what happens. All right, you take it easy, man. I'll see you soon.
All right, thanks.
No problem. Robert Sapp joined me for a call in just to chime in a little bit on the focus of the two biggest focuses of sports right now. Tiger Woods and Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, Tiger Woods, whichever order you want to take them in. The other headline in sports, besides, you put those two aside, and this would be the biggest story, if not for those two, is Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez apparently purchased medical records from the Biogenesis lab down in South Florida, the medical records that would have frankly exposed him and other players in terms of paying for the drugs and those documents that would have just exposed everybody. A-Rod paid the guy, wanted to pay the guy $4,000. First of all, the guy, his name is Michael Porter Fisher. Michael Porter Fisher goes out there, you used to work for the company. He obviously had a falling out with Anthony Bosch, who owned the company. All right. And so Michael Porter Fisher threatened to expose everybody if he didn't receive, an extra $4,000 that was owed to him. A-Rod and people found out and basically, told Anthony Bosch, here, I'll pay $4,000 so that this can stay under wraps. So A-Rod apparently paid $4,000 to get the documents. Major League Baseball apparently paid the place to get the documents. So it's basically an arms race in terms of paying these documents. Because Major League Baseball wants A-Rod out, period. They want A-Rod out of baseball, along with the Yankees, too, as well. But they want A-Rod out, And the only way that Major League Baseball can expose A-Rod, along with other players, they want Ryan Braun bad, too. They want him bad, is by getting these documents. I don't know how this would go in a court of law, considering that Major League Baseball would have gone taken this means to get these documents. But at this point, they're willing to do to take that. Well, at this point, in Major League Baseball, you have to take this chance and go for the gusto and get these documents from A-Rod. I mean, from that lab, which they have. Major League Baseball does have the documents. They do have the documents. Now they're going to have to try to connect A-Rod with those documents. That's going to be hard, but apparently the New York Times report that A-Rod and a representative purchased documents and to have them destroyed for $4,000. This thing is, this is going to drag out for a long, long time. And, baseball in the worst way needs to win this to get A-Rod out. I think that baseball has had its fill with A-Rod. I know the Yankees have had their fill with A-Rod and that dark cloud that he cast over the sport right now. And we'll see what happens with it. It's going to be, again, you're going to see a lot of things about it within the next couple of days. When we return, we're going to have some entertainment news. A lot going on. We'll talk about Mad Men, and we'll also talk some Jay-Z and Beyonce as well. We'll be right back.
It makes it easier to bear.
At 11 o'clock hour, Roslyn Ross will join us at the top of the hour to talk about the world of sports, NBA, of course, and also sexuality in sports. A lot of talk about that in recent weeks with the NHL and also the NFL, so we'll chime in with a couple of things about that as she will join us at the top of the hour. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Again, thanks to Robert Satt for joining us. Talking about Kobe Bryant and Tiger Woods, certainly the two biggest stories in sports right now. Jay-Z goes, along with Beyonce, of course, his lovely wife, goes over to Cuba just because she takes a couple cigars, tour the city, and, goes on vacation, just a vacation. That's what Jay-Z does, goes to Cuba. So, Which is fine, but the problem is he didn't have the proper visa in terms of paperwork to go over there. The only way you are, as an American citizen, supposed to go over to Cuba or allowed to go over to Cuba is if you're going with a group of people, you're doing, I guess, research, you're doing. College student, something like that. There are certain laws and certain things that have to connect. They have to all fall in line in order for you as an American to make that trip. Jay-Z, of course, met none of those Jay-Z didn't meet any of those criteria, of course. So big thing made about him going to Cuba. He wrote a song about it and kept it moving and generated a lot of buzz with his trip to Cuba, had pictures all over the internet. Here's the thing, and this is the genius of Jay-Z, and this is why. I mean, they're, you know, Kobe Bryant, Jay-Z, Barry Bonds, those three guys have to have a movie done on them before in the next 10 to 15 years. They have to about their lives. It's just fascinating. Jay-Z going to Cuba to me is not a big deal. I could care less in terms of that, from that standpoint. But Jay-Z did this. This was by design. Not only was it just a pure vacation, but you understand this. He comes out. He goes to Cuba. He writes a song about it. Mind you, he's trying to also, he has just broken off from the Brooklyn Nets, sold his shares to work with CAA, become a full-time agent. Guy has Robinson Cano, has Victor Cruz. This is all by design. I mean, this is what Jay-Z does. I mean, this is all by design, all of it. I mean, he keeps himself relevant. You know, he's going to keep himself relevant. Some way, somehow, he's going to make an album through attention that he's going to draw. He's going to find a way to reinvent himself and keep himself relevant. And this is, again, this exposure is just going to draw more athletes to the Rock Nation, to Rock Nation Sports, his new sports agency company that he's started. It's only going to draw more. I mean, if you're Nerlens Noel, if you're Andrew Wiggins, if you are a top athlete, especially African-American athlete, you're going to be like, man, this dude went to Cuba. He can do it. You know, he has it like that. Like, this is going to draw you to come sign with Jay-Z. And Jay-Z knew he wasn't. I mean, he's not going to go to jail. He's not even going to get a fine for this. What are they going to do to Jay-Z? So, again, just ingenious by Jay-Z to do this. Besides taking a vacation, and I've never been to Cuba, but I can pretty much think that there are a lot of more exotic and about a thousand more places that Jay-Z could have went that would have been more attractive to him than Cuba. But none of them would have drawn this type of attention based on the laws and bylaws and things of that nature in terms of the visa and how that works out. Mad Men, I watched the 2-hour premiere. I told you that I was going to start watching it again despite the fact that I've been off it since the beginning, and this is season 6. Two-hour premiere last week. I enjoyed it. Don Draper, the Hawaiian vacation was funny, and it was, you know, there was certainly a lot going on with Vietnam and a lot of introspective things going on with Don. But Don comes back from the vacation. He cheats on his wife, and then he throws up at a co-worker's funeral for his mother. I mean, geez, like, Don. Oh my goodness. Don is drunk basically at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then I like his line afterwards. I guess I didn't eat. So, oh, my God. Don, you know, you have to love Don Draper on that show. Brilliant, brilliantly played by John Hamm, of course. But you have to love it. Because he's going to be consistently who he is. And despite the fact that his wife, by the way, it's not like, you know, he's not, you know, it shows him he's cheating with the doctor's wife, who lives in the same building, by the way. So he's gotten so lazy he can't even take his infidelity outside his own building. You know, he gives his, maybe that is the reason why he gave the doctor the free camera. I'm going to cheat on your wife again, so here's my, you know, this is guilty Don, just giving away a camera because I'm going to cheat on your wife later on tonight. But the thing is, the lady is an older lady compared to, is older and is nowhere near as attractive as his wife. I don't understand it. Not like he has an older wife and cheating on her with a younger girl. So at this point, it's not even about the physical attraction. It's just about maybe he's relieving some anxiety. He's relaxing. He's relaxing. This is what he does to relieve the stress from being Don Draper. But again, overall, excellent episode. Roger Sterling was great. I forgot the guy's name, his name in real life, but the character Roger Sterling was tremendous in the episode. He, you know, the asking the doctor why he doesn't laugh at his jokes, the whole with his mother, the shoeshine guy, the shoeshine guy dies, and he, you know, he breaks down. Excuse me, breaks down. Of course, at the end of the episode, he hadn't cried throughout the whole episode. He snaps, I believe, on his sister for bringing, I don't know, that was her boyfriend. He basically snaps on her and says, "This is my funeral." Hey, I loved it. I mean, for a 2-hour season premiere, I absolutely loved the episode. I loved it. My one problem with it is, well, there was not enough Joan in the episode, not enough Christina Hendricks. You need more Joan Harris. I mean, come on. It's Christina Hendricks. You need more Christina Hendricks. So hopefully she has a bigger role in this second episode. She's a partner now. Slept, of course, with one of the executives of the ad to get that ad from last season, and which took the company to another level. So, you know, she has a bigger role now. But this is only episode one, so I'm sure you'll see plenty of her as the course of the season moves along. Still to come on this latest edition of the Serial Queen Review, a big fight, of course, in the world of baseball, the impact of that. Also, again, Rosalind Ross will join the program, and racing sports. Jackie Robinson, of course, celebrating the 50th anniversary of Jackie Robinson come Monday. How far have we come in terms of racing sports? We'll talk about that and so much more on this latest edition of the Serial Queen Review. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday morning, of the Serial Queen Review. Again, big stories in the world of sports. Three big stories of three of the most prominent athletes, you know, in recent memory, to be honest with you. Tiger Woods, 2-stroke penalty at the Masters, now is 5 strokes behind the leader, Jason Day, who's looking, by the way, in terms of Jason Day, who's become almost an afterthought considering what has transpired. Become the first Australian to win the Masters, trying to, and there have been a lot of tremendous Australian players, but none of them have ever won the Masters. Of course, the closest was Greg Norman back in '96 when he had that huge lead and just collapsed in the fourth round that allowed Nick Faldo to win his third Masters. So you have that. Kobe Bryant is going to be done for the season and the playoffs with a torn Achilles. It's not official, but we'll have an MRI today to certainly confirm that. So Lakers still, amazingly, still probably have a chance to make the playoffs considering that I don't know what San Antonio and Houston are going to be playing for. Plus, there's still a game up on Utah. Utah still has a game, a couple games left, one with Minnesota and one with Memphis. So, of course, if the Lakers went out, they will automatically, they will, the Lakers control their own destiny. If they went out, they will be in the playoffs. If Utah, if the Lakers lose, and, you know, if the Lakers, if they both finish tied, then Utah will earn the tiebreaker. And get the eighth seed. At this point, I don't think it even matters because neither one of those teams is going to do anything with Oklahoma City or even a banged up San Antonio. Far too much is being made, as I'm watching SportsCenter here, far too much is being made on this scoring race between Kevin Durant and Carmelo Anthony. Who cares, okay, about who leads the NBA in scoring? Really? No one cares. I mean, you talk about meaningless records. NBA records don't mean anything. They don't. Unless somebody goes out there tonight and scores 101 points in a game. No one cares about who leads the NBA in scoring. I mean, they keep following this thing. Carmelo's 32, Durant 31. He's 101 tenths of a point, 1,000. Nobody gives a damn. I don't know. It's ESPN that's driving this thing. I just don't get how much in it. Every year you see it all the time on ESPN with them pushing this thing and keeping it update day in and day out about the scoring race. You know, Kevin had 35. He's 20. He's at 28.7. Durant's at 28.1. Come on. Like, it's enough already. No one cares about this. NBA stats, there are only a handful of records in sports that actually mean something. And I would say the majority of those are in baseball anyway. Only a handful that mean anything. Last night with the baseball, great win for the Braves, who stay hot despite the injury to Freddie Freeman. They're 9-1, best record in baseball. They take out the Nationals 7-4. They come back from they were down 4-0 for the majority most of the game. They took the net. They Ross Detweiler looked unhittable for about 5 or 6 innings, but once the Nationals got into their Braves got into their bullpen, they were able to come back and win extra innings. The Nationals, Nationals are fine. They're 7-3, but you do have to be concerned about the bullpen. The bullpen against quality teams, and Miami is not a quality team, has struggled. Whether it be Cincinnati, whether it be Chicago, and now with the Braves. Now, all three of those teams are very good offensive teams. So probably the three best offensive teams, along with the Nationals, in the National League. The Braves, a ton of home runs. Cincinnati can score. Chicago White Sox are pretty good. They're not in the National League, of course, but they are also a very good offensive team. So I'll be concerned a little bit about the Nationals' bullpen because, these closers and middle relief guys can go year by year. I mean, they can look super 1 year and they come back down to earth the next. They can look like they can look awful 1 year and then next thing you know, have a great year out of nowhere. You wonder, based on the fact that last year, the Nationals' bullpen was basically lights out. You wonder if some of these guys are just coming back down to earth at the same time. I mean, whether it be, Tyler Clippard, Soriano, who's been bad. I mean, he's been bad this year. Rafael Soriano coming on to has been horrible this year, now made the closer. So, that's something to keep your eye on. Again, very ugly, very early. Very early in the baseball season. Nationals are still 7-3. Should be a very interesting series to watch. The Braves are going to be around. They are the Nationals' only competition, as far as I'm concerned, in that division. Despite how well the Mets have been playing, I see them as their only competition in that division. I do think the Braves will get a wild card, even if they don't win the division. So, the Braves can hit. We know that. Angels are now falling to 2-8, amazingly, and this is why. Remember when I did that? Five teams that can win the whole championship, that can win the World Series. Now narrows it to four. I took the Angels off, and you know they can't pitch. They can't pitch. It's blah blah. And if they don't go out there now, their hitters are off to a relatively slow start for the most part. They'll hit, but again, that pitching staff doesn't scare anybody. And they're in a division. Oakland's gotten off to a great start. Texas is playing better than what people expected. So, I mean, that division all of a sudden, Seattle's a little bit improved, but with a little bit improved, they got something with Michael Morse. Division's not going to be easy. And again, they're going to play better. But I just don't trust them long term over the course of the year to win that division or to win a division, let alone contend for a world championship. Of course, the big story in baseball Thursday night, you had the brawl for it all, basically down in San Diego with the Dodgers and Padres. We're going to put that on hold right now as we are joined by another guest for the Cyril Quinn Review. Rosalind Ross joins the Cyril Quinn Review. Rosalind, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you? Great to talk to you again.
It's been a while. It's been a while, but as always, it is certainly great to speak to you. We're going to get right to it, Rosalind. What are your thoughts about the Kobe Bryant injury and the future of Kobe Bryant as a Los Angeles Laker?
Yeah, I was thinking, I was like, as soon as we get on the show, like everything we thought we were going to talk about,
it changed my whole program. It changed my entire program.
I didn't see it when it happened. I was actually out last night just bouncing around, and I was able to see a couple of replays from where he had gone to the ground with what seemed to be something that felt like a knee injury, I guess, which it seems like. I think somebody said that he had a couple of knee scares last night as well, where he hurt his knee, and then it happens that he has the big injury. I was just saying this, for a regular person who doesn't run and jump for a living, an Achilles tear is a big deal. I mean, it is a very difficult injury to recover from, even just for you to be able to walk around in your daily life and sit at your computer desk all day or whatever the most of us do when we're working. For a guy who makes his living playing the sport of basketball, particularly at Kobe's age, you just wonder if it's something that he'll be able to come back from and be able to come back in the form that he wants to come back in. I mean, this is a guy who said he really doesn't want to be in the league where he's averaging, if he's still a part of the league, he doesn't want to be averaging 12, 13, 14, 15 points a game, 19 points a game. He really wants to be contributing still at the high level that we've seen him do so over the course of this 17-year career. And you just got to wonder if that's something that he'll be able to do. We've been, over the course of the last couple of hours, the stories have started to come out, the tweets have come out, comparing this injury, who has come back from this type of injury, when and what career they did it in. I've seen the Dan Marino comparison. The one that I'm probably most comfortable with and most encouraged by is the fact that David Beckham tore his Achilles tendon and was able to, at 34, and was able to come back. And a lot of the footwork that you see in soccer is not unlike what happens on a basketball court. But, you just got to wonder if he can come back and make it happen at the same level. Even if you can't expect him to come back at the level he's been at this season, because this season has been incredible. But if he can come back with Kobe from 2 years ago, maybe we'll be seeing something remarkable. You just have to wonder if it can happen. And I'm not sure at his age with this grave injury if it can really happen. Five NBA finals, five NBA Finals wins, five championships, two Finals MVPs, one regular season MVP, two scoring titles, 15 All-Star games, appointments, 10-time first-team All-NBA defense. I mean, this guy has defined a generation. And for the folks who really haven't been appreciating what Kobe has done or have found it better to be more critical of him than to sit back and appreciate it, now it's daunting on us all that, you know, we may have seen the last of it, and we'll certainly miss it when it's gone, because this is a big deal. I mean, we've never even lost Kobe to the season. Like, we've never had to face, oh, Kobe's going to be out for the season with this injury. That's not even happened in his career. So now to think
right.
that even reading that was a big enough deal, but to think that it could be, you know, not only this season, of course, but maybe a few months in, or maybe even all of next season as well, it's really kind of overwhelming to take in. It's a tough thing. I was wondering about you, how you were taking it all when it happened last night.
I mean, last night it was a whirlwind because, mind you, I'm in – Masters mode as well with the golf is going on. So that
right.
you know, is part that I'm dialed into that as well. So I was preparing a program. I had NBA TV on because I knew they were going to be cutting into the Lakers Golden State game because of the playoff implications. So I had the game on ESPN as far as the game cast and what have you to follow the score. And I see that it's like 3 minutes left, and I see that Jody Meeks is on the court instead of Kobe Bryant. And I'm like, why is he out the game? That was my first thing. So I'm confused by that. Like, why is he – now how are you going to choose to rest him? I mean, you've been playing him like a mule for the past month. So, you know, why choose to rest him now? That's what I'm thinking. So they cut on the game. They cut to the game. They show the injury. And then they show the two prior injuries where he had a knee and a foot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I didn't think it was that serious when I first – I didn't see it live. I saw the replay of it. I didn't think it was that serious, to be honest with you. I thought that it was like one of those where he's just, you know, going to, you know, be out for this game. But
certainly
maybe he'll be back. I mean, as indestructible as this guy has been, unless you see him just carted off, you don't think any injury is serious. Until, of course – you know, the tweets come out and everything comes out. And he says, "I can't walk."
Oh,
and
yeah.
At that point, it was like, yeah, that's pretty much when he came out with the, you know, when they say he had tears in his eyes, I was like, that's it. I mean, I knew that this season was over. That's just Kobe Bryant is not, that's just not who he is. He's not going to cry for just anything. So I immediately thought about the future of the franchise. I immediately thought about the fact is, yeah, he can come back. He has a mindset to come back. He's as mentally as tough as an athlete as we've ever seen. But my question is, why would he come back?
Yeah.
Let's be honest with you. He's putting his body. He was already talking about retirement before, but he's putting his body through just to get himself ready for game day to play at this level. He's doing all this for an AFC. And the direction of this franchise, we haven't talked for a while. Let's be honest, the direction of this franchise is in question right now with Jerry Buss passing away. Jim Buss doesn't have a clue. He has Mike D'Antoni, who doesn't have a clue.
Right. right.
It's just not to me, if I'm Kobe Bryant, it's not a matter of if, but do I want to come back? Now, he hasn't said this publicly, but knowing how much Kobe Bryant wants to win a sixth championship, and he wants it in the worst way, trust me. Does he realistically think that this franchise going in the direction that they're going in can contend for a sixth championship in the future? I mean, I don't think they can unless they make some major changes as far as coaching and as far as how they construct their roster. I think I would have to think that he'd be thinking the same thing.
I agree, and I think it's hard for us to watch him go out on an injury, but, you know, just real talk, I don't see how I feel weird even saying this. Like, I need to give a disclaimer, but this is kind of a good way for him to go out. Like, he goes out in a season where, and I meant to pull those up, but his numbers, what he's been doing really over the last six games, the points, the minutes, the assists, the stuff we're seeing, I mean, he's shooting 46% from the floor. This is like 08 Kobe. You know, so what we're what we've seen from him this season has been really phenomenal. So as a and I agree with you. So as opposed to trying to come back and forcing us maybe to glimpse a shot of a Kobe who hasn't who is not this Kobe and who probably isn't the Kobe we've seen maybe the last 5 years, why not just have this be the swan song? And, again, I know it's a tough thing, but I agree with you 100% that at this point he really should take some time to figure out why 17 seasons, 15 All-Star selections, so only 2 years has he not been playing at a level that what didn't warrant an All-Star selection. This has been a great, amazing career. No need to come back and give the people something to attach, you know, this idea that we can take away from it in some way. And certainly with all the points you made about what's happening with the Lakers, you know, the fact that people don't have a lot of trust in Jim Buss makes it difficult to get, you know, a coach that does have a clue. So how long are you going to be stuck with Mike D'Antoni? Every single thing that could go wrong for the Lakers this season, it's been Murphy's Law. Every single thing that can go wrong has absolutely gone wrong.
No question.
Everything.
Every time
they seem like they're getting on track, you know, they get on track. Well, first of all, you get D'Antoni, and that's questionable, but you think it's going to be okay with just Steve Nash.
Robert,
and then Steve Nash.
You're being kind, but quite questionable. That was what Mike D'Antoni was. They should have never hired Mike D'Antoni. I mean, they'd have been better off keeping Mike Brown than hiring Mike D'Antoni, to be honest with you. All right, like, you know, everybody criticizes Mike Brown. It got off to a slow start. I realize this. But remember, Mike Brown last year had them as a number three seed with a lot less talent than what they have now and in a season where it was only 66 games and Kobe Bryant, who wasn't at this level. And
exactly.
So, like, Mike D'Antoni is, like, he was the worst possible choice considering the roster that he had and considering, you know, coaching superstars. To me, they have no chance with Mike D'Antoni. Even if they were all healthy, they have no. It's just is like there's a guy who just doesn't coach any defense. You can't. I mean, unless your offense is going to score 130 points a game, which is not going to happen. Yeah, the Mike D'Antoni thing was not going to work out. I don't understand. I will never for the life of me ever understand that choice and why they went with him. Yeah, I mean, you know, let's say you don't want to do the Phil thing again. Fine, you know, go.
Right.
Brian Shaw, I mean, go in another direction. I mean, it just made no sense. I'd rather have you go to college, go get Tom Izzo. It made zero sense to me. So, but that again, Jim Buss, again, when that patriarch dies, you know, George Steinbrenner with the Yankees, Jerry Buss, is a major drop off. That's all there is to it in terms of when a family's running an organization. And I think we've seen it with the Yankees a little bit. I think we've definitely seen it. We're going to see it with the Lakers, that Jerry Buss, of how good Jerry Buss was, how great Jerry Buss was as an owner.
Yeah.
And as an owner and just as a businessman and understanding the NBA, the product, the NBA landscape, the entertainment landscape. So,
you know, I wasn't as critical of the D'Antoni hire in the beginning, but I figured out that he was dead wrong for the job when I, and this may have been about 3 or 4 months ago, but I read a quote from him where he says he was talking about how he was working to put Powell in situations where he could ratchet up his outside shooting. You know, yeah, we got to get Powell into the corner and hit some three-pointers from over there. And I'm like, goodness gracious, this is laughable now. This guy has no clue how to organize the offense around the pieces that he has on this roster right now. He is just flying by the seat of his pants, and it was embarrassing. So right when you think D'Antoni's being humbled a little bit, then more injuries start happening in. Powell, Meta, and then, of course, this Kobe injury, you know, is the seal of doom for this team. Certainly still a strong chance to make the playoffs, but, you know, the fact that Kobe was having to play every single minute of every single game for these last few games here lets you know certainly how important he has been down the stretch for these wins and even the possibility of the eighth seed in the playoffs. You know, so like you said, where is the team even going? Team doesn't make the playoffs. Team has a questionable owner, has a questionable coach. You know, has not even, who even knows how this entire thing is going to reflect on Dwight Howard's thinking about his future with the team. And that's the big, one big positive piece that Lakers fans, you know, and folks who respect the Lakers organization have been saying the team can build around. But if he, you know, goes further into the abyss of uncertainty, it's just a dark cloud. And I would hate to see Kobe Bryant come back, play at less than Kobe Bryant status. And, oh, also, by the way, has zero chance to get that sixth championship. So I agree. I think the question is really for him, why not let this ride with this awesome season I've had? Tough way for it to end, but 17 years at that, at the level he's been at, he's really defined a generation. I mean, he really has defined this generation of basketball.
Here's what I would like him to do personally. I would have to put aside my loyalty as a Laker fan. I would like him to, you know, take his time to come back, and I would like him to finish his career somewhere else to where he can get another championship or two. I still believe that he can play at a high level, you know, with modern medicine and with, you know, seeing guys be able to come back from these injuries. You know, Terrell Suggs, Ray Lewis, amazingly coming back from in-season injuries to play at the levels that they played at, and he, to me, is even more determined than they are, as great as they are. So I believe that he can come back, but I just don't. I just don't think that the organization, frankly, deserves him at this point. To be honest with you,
yeah.
I think that the sacrifices that he has made for this organization, as far as in this past year or so, and what they've done in terms of not only with the coaching, with the roster, with the direction, I just think that he'd be better off just moving on. I mean, I just, you know, even if he has to take all next year off, to be honest, he won't. But I think that, you know, I'd rather see him go to another place and put somebody else. I don't care if it's Chicago, put somebody else over the top to win a championship.
Yeah.
And unlike LeBron and Bosh, they were chasing titles in order to get number one. He already has five. So you want,
exactly.
Like, to me, that gives him way more credibility as far as trying to chase a ring. Chasing number six compared to chasing number one is a different animal. It will not happen, but I personally would like to see that. Because to me, the Lakers organization right now, it's just they don't know what – they just don't have a clue as an organization. They don't know, you know, which way is up. So I think that, you know, I think he will come back. And I think that I think eventually he will come back. What he does after next year, I don't know, but I think – in my personal opinion, I think he will end up coming back. How about the rest of the NBA here? Do you think, is there anybody, and I mean anybody, that can remotely compete or even beat the Miami Heat?
Pains me to say it. I just don't think so. Certainly not in their own conference.
Right.
I don't think anyone's competing with them in the Eastern Conference. You know, the part of me that absolutely loves, you know, what Kevin Durant is doing this season, you know, right there on the cusp of, you know, accomplishing the vaunted 50-40-90. I mean, I would like to think that he is part of a team that will be able to challenge the Heat and we can get an exciting, you know, finals again with them coming out on top. I just don't see it happening. One thing that I think is going to cost the Thunder in their playoff run is the loss of James Harden. I think this is now going to be the point where we all see that having a guy that can really create and get his own shot going down the stretch of games in the way that Harden was able to do, take the outside shot, really drive to the basket. I mean, everything he's doing at this ridiculously high level in Houston was really a key cog in what we saw in the Thunder last year. And Kevin Martin just doesn't – I guess he fills the hole from a point perspective, but definitely not from the other things that Harden brought to that team. And, you know, so I think it's going to cost them, and I think it is going to cost them the ability to beat the Heat in the finals. That being said, I really just don't see it happening. LeBron is – you know, one of my good friends who was a big Cleveland fan, you know, long before LeBron even made the jump to Miami, was talking about how much of an alien this dude was. Like, he would say, Kobe's being a beast right now, and he'd say LeBron's an alien. And Though I didn't think it was warranted then, I really think it's warranted now. He's on another planet with
no question.
Yeah, with this level of play, and even and honestly, I gotta say, people were ready to write off Dwayne Wade and said he was done, he was washed up.
I was one of them.
And I didn't remember that you were one of them. I definitely.
I didn't expect Wade to come back and play as well as he has.
I don't think anyone expected him to play like he's playing now.
That's the key. I mean, we know what LeBron is, and he has taken to another level. But Dwayne Wade playing at this level makes him unbeatable. Bosh is going to be solid as a third wheel. You know, he's going to be fine. It seems like everything has come together for them in this third year.
Yeah.
They've all figured it out. They're comfortable with each other. They love playing with each other. They're deeper than what they've ever been. I mean, their bench, you know, they're winning games where LeBron and Wade don't even play by 15 and 20 points. So, like, even against bad teams, but still, their bench is deeper than what it's ever been. I just think that they are just unbeatable, frankly, to be honest with you. I think the only team in the league that was constructed to beat them from a talent standpoint was the Los Angeles Lakers, coming in, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Even though it's not going to happen with Mike D'Antoni coaching, but I think from, you know, they had the pieces as far as the inside game and as far as having the perimeter player who can contend with LeBron and Dwayne Wade in terms of Kobe Bryant. So, but other than that, I don't see anybody beating that team. The only team that beats them is they can only beat themselves as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. I just don't see it happening. Too strong this year. Too much, really too much great play out of the big three, plus one of your big three is off the charts. I just don't see it happening. I see a repeat. And, you know, then that always starts the discussion of how many years can they repeat? Like, is this the start now of what was projected to be the Heat dynasty? You know, you got to wonder about that. But right now, it looks like this team is poised to make runs every year with strong finishes that could lead to consecutive final victories.
Well,
definitely this year.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say definitely this year. I think this one's going to be two in a row.
Yeah, this would be a repeat. I mean, the question would be come summer of 2014 when they all – which one, like, who will opt out? I mean, all of them have the ability to opt out of their contracts at the end of the 2014 season. Wade will be 32, LeBron, you know, does he go back to Cleveland? Does Bosh say, now I have 2 to 3 championships? Let's say, even if they don't win it next year, let's say I have 2 championships, I want to get paid now. I think next year, and remind you, and remember, they're going to have to take considerable pay cuts to stay together,
yeah.
Considering the new CBA. Are they all willing to do that for a second time? So they could.
I don't think so.
That's what I'm saying. Next year, I think next year is going to be like, you know, it's going to determine the fate of that franchise for the near future as far as what direction they go in. I mean, they're going to, they, all three of those guys, I think next year is going to be their last year together, to be honest with you. Looking ahead.
Wow.
Just looking ahead, but I think, I just don't see them taking that. I mean, I don't see them all taking pay cuts to be together for another 3 or 4 years when they've won possibly 2 to 3 championships.
And then LeBron, back to Cleveland scenario.
Kyrie, you have Kyrie. Listen, that Cleveland has a lot of nice pieces. They
do.
Kyrie Irving is going to be one of the top young point guards. He is the top young point guard in the league as far as I'm concerned. Definitely, if not up, you know, certainly up there. I mean, you still have, you know, you have Vereshchuk will be back from injury. Deion Waiters has had quietly a nice year. Tristan Thompson, they have some pieces on that team that, you know, even with LeBron back team in the Eastern Conference, that shifts it automatically back in, you know, to Cleveland's favor, to be honest with you. So I think the Cleveland thing is a real, real possibility without question. You know, if you're Chris Bosh, you say, you know, I have 2 or 3 championships, I want to get a max contract and, you know, where, and become the man again. I've won 2 championships, won 3 championships. LeBron and Dwayne Wade, he can have 4 championships at the end of next year. Does he want to sacrifice? I mean, I just think next year it'll get to a point where they just be like, you know, we sacrificed enough. You know, let's keep him. You know, we might go. I would not be surprised if they planned it this way to break up after next year, to be honest with you. I would not shock
me. Really? Now, that's an interesting theory.
It would not shock me.
Just to go ahead and get it done and then let it go. And then just say, you know what, guys, we did it. Let's go our separate way.
Hey, we won three championships in 4 years. We won two championships in 4 years. You know, let's go our separate ways. And, you know, it was real. It was real while it lasted.
Right.
With these guys, even how it was with these guys, it wouldn't shock me. It just wouldn't. It wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I think, you know, LeBron, of course, there's so many possibilities because as soon as, you know, league starts to decide, I mean, as soon as teams start to focus in and decide to zero in on the opportunity to land LeBron, then, you know, we're going to see the sweepstakes happen again, and it's going to be like roulette to see who lands him. Certainly that return to Cleveland is a curious return to me, only because there's just such bad blood there. But I think LeBron
would, they would get over that in about 10 seconds. They would get over that. If he said he wanted to go back to Cleveland, it would be 5 seconds. Even Dan Gilbert is smart enough from a business standpoint to understand how much money he would bring back to Cleveland. That would get patched up. That aspect of it is going to be a question of whether LeBron wants to go back to Cleveland, not whether Cleveland accepts him.
Well, and I think he's such a homeboy. I think and that's what I was going to say. I think he's such a homeboy that he still wouldn't mind the return back to his home.
I think he wants to go back to Cleveland. And that's why I think he's driving so hard to win this year and to possibly win next year. He wants to win as much as possible right now so that people could say, you know, well, he only won one championship. So if he has two or three championships, then they can't say, well, he only had one fluke championship. So he wants this championship in the worst way this year, and he would want next year to be, you know, even though it would be difficult to win a third-year championship, but he would want to win next year in the worst way. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm going to shift gears a little bit, Roslyn, to a topic that has ran rampant in the last couple of weeks as far as homosexuality in sports. I don't know if you read this. I'm sure you did. The NHL, a couple of days ago, announced some type of, a program that would support gay athletes if they chose to come out. The NFL has had pressure from players who have come out to put some type of program. And what are your thoughts about this situation, about athletes coming out of the closet, or should the leagues, you know, have programs? What should the Roger Goodells and Gary Bettmans do to players, not to do to players, but to do if players do come out? What support systems should be in place, if any at all? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think sports are really like the last frontier as it relates to homosexuality in, you know, and on a big stage. Sports are definitely the last frontier because you see it all in entertainment. Certainly the revelation of Frank Ocean, big-time R&B singer who's been on hooks with rappers.
Right.
You know, that was a great move in that industry, a great movement of thought in that industry to understand, you know, homophobia really doesn't have a place at this level anymore. When you're on this grand stage, you just have to understand that you're going to work with talent that, you know, may choose to be of same-sex orientation.
Right.
And I think, and I talked a little bit about this in a piece I wrote about Manti Te'o, I think that, and the possibility of whether or not he's gay, he denies it, but in looking at that and how obsessive the NFL was during the combine to find out about guys' sexual preferences and whether they, whether they have wives or girlfriends or whatever, you know, I think winning has a way about solving everything. Certainly, you know, so when you look ahead to the first guy coming out and being an openly gay player in the NFL, NHL, baseball, whatever it is, you know that it's going to be sort of a media circus, and that's going to be a distraction for the team, for the player. So when you look at it from that standpoint, then the programs do sort of seem warranted because when you think about how strongly these leagues want to protect the image and the images of, you know, their players, you got to know how much attention this guy is going to get, and you may want to have a program in place to help him adjust to this media attention and to what it may mean, because that's a next level layer of, you know, compounding on everything else that happens. And the leagues have been very forthright in coming together when, okay, we know that, you know, you're going to have more money than you've ever had in your life. So we want to put a support program in place to help you understand type of financial decisions, who to avoid, how to stay out of trouble. We know that you'll have access to more things than you've ever had in your life, more women, more, you know, more VIP club experiences. So let's make sure that we, you know, link you up with some guys to talk through how that's going to feel and then how you want to, how that may affect your decision making. And I think this is just the next layer of that. You know, so now we understand that you're going to be coming out in a sport that in on an arena that really does value machismo. This idea that these sports are these, that sports figures are these macho guys. So now I think it is not a bad idea for the leagues to say, you know what, we may need to put something in place to be a support group for how to handle the attention of this as well, because it is going to be a big deal to start. And then once it starts, it'll, you know, sort of reach this middling treading water place where we're aware of it, it has our attention, and then it, you know, then that person will win and it'll go away. Because ultimately, if the first openly gay player is a guy who competes hard and who has great work ethic and he is still committed to being a piece of a winning organization, a winning team, then that's going to be the only thing that matters. You know, I think ultimately winning solves everything. And I don't think that even if the problems arise originally in the locker room where guys are uncomfortable, you know, where it is a distraction, I think winning will solve the entire problem. But you just know it's going to happen. It's going to happen very soon. It should happen. You look at what Royce White has even done with, you know, this anxiety disorder and the attention that he's been garnering for, you know, his plight against the Rockets, against the league, bringing attention to this. This happens just because this is a stage where we don't expect for guys to have, you know, we expect them to be a certain way. And certainly, unfortunately, as it relates to gays and lesbians, there's this idea of a softness or whatever that's associated with it, which is clearly unwarranted, but it's part of it. So now when you look at a sport that is supposed to be about being macho and tough and strong, you look at sports and it's the opposite of what people have decided gay and lesbian is. And there should be a group in place, some sort of support program in place to help guys, you know, maximize the opportunity to be in the league, stay focused, and still be able to be authentic to who they are. And so if they're gay, then they should be able to be authentic to that and still contribute. And I applaud any league that's willing to find some way, certainly there'll be kinks, but to find something, some way to help guys make that adjustment.
How about the pushback from other players in terms of not so much the guys being gay? Because I'm sure that guys who are gay in the locker room or who are gay who haven't come out, there's no way to me that somebody within that locker room doesn't know. I just think that that's the type of thing that you just can't hide over the course of time. But how about the pushback of the NFL, of, like I said, of the NFL locker room to the attention to the programs that the NFL will try to put in place for that player? Like, could it be even more productive if the NFL didn't do anything for somebody who came out openly gay and that player who came out of the closet in the NFL locker room, and the guys within that locker room already knew that person, that player or players were gay?
Yeah, you know what, that's an excellent question, excellent point, but I think ultimately what it comes down to is we've had, you know, a great opportunity to catch a glimpse of how, you know, specifically the NFL under Roger Goodell intends to conduct itself. And we can sort of tell that he's a control freak in the way that he is obsessed with controlling the image of this sport. And so in my mind, it just plays out to the place where, you know, like you said, now there's definitely got to be players who are gay who their teammates, Even if they haven't confided in every single member of the team, somebody knows. I mean, that's just the way it goes in the locker room. You get close to some guys, some guys know more about you than the other guy across the, you know, with the locker across the breezeway from you. But ultimately, you know, like you said, somebody knows something about some player that may or may not be, you know, public information at this point. But I think what if it comes out on a national stage where a player comes out and says, I want to be the first, I've decided that I can't carry this weight any longer, you know, I've just been moved to be the first player to admit that I am gay and I'm an NFL player, I think the machine that is the Roger Goodell control machine will go into effect and decide that he'll want to try to, you know, to try to take as much control over how information gets released, how this player interacts with the media, what he says, and not just the player who admits that they are gay, but the players around this player as well, because certainly guys shoot off and say the wrong stuff all the time.
Right.
You know, so I think Roger Goodell will go into overdrive to make sure that protecting the league image and making sure you don't put a microphone in front of the wrong guy on the wrong day, I think he'll go into overdrive to protect that and make sure, you know, nothing too crazy is said and nothing too crazy happens that will in any way tarnish the image of the league.
Right. See, I'm glad I got your perspective with this. I don't think anything should be done, to be honest with you, as far as support programs or as far as, you know, trying to make this bigger than it already is. If a guy or guys come out in the NHL or any professional sport, especially in the NFL, and say I'm gay, then so be it. I think that, you know, number one, I think more than likely the people within that locker room already knew. And number two, I just feel like that guy is not going to be condemned by his teammates or by the media in the world that we live in when it's not no longer taboo to be gay. To be gay. I mean, we all work around people who are the homosexual, who are gay, you know, females and males, you know, in some form or fashion. So it's nothing new. It's accepted in our society. You know, you have gay marriages, things of that nature, where you agree or disagree with whatever religious beliefs you have or I may have. The point is, it exists. So I just don't see it. I think it would actually be harmful to those individuals if the NFL went out of its way to I want to say coddle them, so to speak.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
I think if a guy comes out and says he's gay, then he's gay. Then it's so be it. And then I'm like, oh, okay. You know, it'll be a story for about a couple minutes, and then we'll move on to the next story. I mean, that's the 24-hour news cycle as we speak.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't understand what, and again, I don't understand even what those programs can be. I mean, you want PR people saying, I just don't think the media. I have to give the media some credit in terms of being in terms of some of the questions that they would ask that guy. I would not ask one question to a guy if he were gay, as far as, you know, how does it feel being gay in a locker room. I don't care that you're gay.
Right, exactly.
I care about the fact that can you catch a football? Can you throw? It doesn't matter to me. You have some media idiots that will ask, you know, that will ask those kind of questions that have nothing to do with the on the field product. But I think that would wear thin after a while, as far as some of those questions. I think most media people would be smart enough not to ask questions like, you know, how does your lover feel about you in a locker room with all men? Things that I don't think they would. I think the media would be more responsible than that. And to ask those type of personal questions to somebody who was openly gay. So
have a point. I think it's a catch-22 because, to your point, do the programs give, you know, do all these proposals for programs give this more attention, make it a bigger deal than it has to be? You know, so that's the catch-22 of it. You know, do you want to go and try to control the image that is left behind after the announcement happens, or do you want to let the announcement happen and then let it run its media cycle, be done with it, and then not have these programs so that it doesn't get more attention than it should? I mean, like you said, it's happened. And I, like I said, it's the last frontier. Really, sports is like this last sacred place where people just want to hold on to the idea that, you know, this is not a part of sports for whatever reason that people are trying to hold on to that idea. But the reality of it is like you said, it's there. It's probably happened. Somebody in the locker room already is aware of the fact that they have a gay teammate on their team. They've been fine with it so far. So certainly putting, you know, all of a sudden putting programs in place to make it a big deal then puts you at risk for maybe overdriving the publicity, which is not what you want to do because it really isn't warranted. It is accepted and it's a part of society and it happens. So why, you know, why do anything to put it more in overdrive than is necessary? It's only a catch-22. I just think it's so freaking some of these guys, like, you know, because they're old school. They come from these old boy networks as well. So part of it is kind of like, you know, because even when I was thinking about the questions that they were asking at the combine, I'm like, this is the year, this is coming off of a season where UA had a player drunk driving, killing his teammate. And then you also had a guy who killed his girlfriend who drives to the team facility and killed himself. And then you're asking, but you're asking in the combine about whether or not a guy has a girlfriend or likes, he likes women. I mean, so already you're being ridiculous. So I think the programs do fit right in line with that. It's like how much voice do you want to give to this when it's not even a big deal? There are bigger issues to focus on. Let the guy come out, make the announcement, be done with it. Don't try to control the situation. I just see some control, some good old boy control freaks at the helm of some of these organizations, and it's hard to know how they'll respond when it comes out.
Yeah, the NFL, listen, the NFL has just completely dropped the ball on this by giving it more attention, and the NFL has almost created a monster, so to speak, from both sides, the players and the NFL. The NFL, like you said, with the combines, asking those questions, which to me were totally unprofessional and inappropriate. It has nothing to do with an on-the-field product.
Exactly.
Okay? And how a guy's going to produce. And then you have the players. You have, you know, two or three gay players with Scott Fujita, Chris Cluey, the punter, coming out and basically demanding that the NFL have programs and things in place for a guy to feel comfortable to come out of the closet. Like, you know, you've come out of the closet in terms of those two players. That's fine. Everybody knows you're gay. It's, you know, whatever. That's not your decision to put pressure on other gay players to come out of the closet. That's ridiculous. If a guy doesn't want to come out of the closet, then he'll not come out of the closet. If he does, then he will. So that, to me, I think this is not being handled properly from you know, the NFL and also from the players as well, and from the Players Association, who's also pushing for,
exactly,
you know, programs. So yeah, I think they are completely, hey, listen, the NFL has bigger issues, yeah, I mean,
exactly,
to worry about with these lawsuits, with these concussions. That's where their total focus needs to be on. The NFL has bigger issues to worry about than the homosexuality. So
I agree.
I think that, you know, if everybody just took a step back and just say, hey, let things happen naturally, then they'll be fine. But I think you have everybody now trying to, you know, I think everybody now trying to attest to the needs of homosexuality and homosexuals and things of that nature. I think that's kind of, you know, I think it's going to backfire if everybody is going to go out and try to, like, just push this thing and push this thing forward, and some people are going to get hurt. I mean, people are going to get hurt from a standpoint, mentally, not physically, but mentally, from a standpoint of, you know, if a guy comes out who doesn't want to come out but feels the pressure to come out based on all this unnecessary attention that's being brought to from so many different parties. That's my fear. If somebody comes out who does not want to come out of the closet, and then where does that leave that particular player? Not on the NFL field, but within himself, about who,
exactly,
you know, from who, in terms of who he is as an individual. It's not fair, to be honest. It really is. It's not fair. for that particular player or players. You know, if you want to come out, come out.
It's true.
If you don't, you don't.
Exactly. It's an excellent point.
So it's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, to watch over the next couple of months, and especially we get in close to the draft, into the NFL season, you know, and what have you, because it's not going anywhere. The situation definitely is not going anywhere. But, Rosalyn, as always, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Certainly the draft, NBA playoffs coming up, NFL draft. We'll try to get you on to talk about the NBA playoffs coming up in a couple of weeks or so. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for coming on, as always.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Rosalyn Ross joining the program. Certainly a lot to discuss as far as Kobe Bryant, NBA, and also homosexuality in terms of the NFL and the NHL as well. It's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Thanks everybody for joining me. Again, you can catch an archive edition of this program anytime at blogtalkradio.com/CyrilQuinn or catch the archive spots. Certainly I will have the opening as well as the Rosalyn Ross interview on at CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. That'll be up before the weekend's out. So I'll talk about that. I will see you soon. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. So long.